gracious. And I got sort of an emotional charge when she showed her carpet. It was a beautiful, huge Persian rug, handmade for her with a specific design. And she said, occasionally, I'm very proud of this, she said, occasionally, when this carpet is taken out, the house to be cleaned, she showed underneath it, on the marble floor, it had the exact same pattern, so she could still enjoy the same pattern when the carpet was taken out to be cleaned. Now, I had a charge over this. I was like, boy, is this ostentatious. And I was starting to do those self-defeating calculations about how many starving children in India that carpet could have fed. But that makes no sense. When we start doing that, how much money this could have done. A friend of mine landed with a spiritual master in India, and they got off the plane and they looked up at the 747, and his disciple said, God, look at the cost of this airplane. Do you know how many people in India it could have fed? And the master looked up and said, yeah, but boy, it's a great airplane. The point is, it's a cosmic kind of question. There will always be people poorer than others. It's not about being heartless. We help where we can. But if you don't eat until all the poor people have been fed, you're going to starve to death. You know that saying, think globally, act locally? What you can do with your money is to help people in your local arena. It's a form of service as well. We'll be getting into that as well. So take a good look first at your attitudes toward money, whether you've been programmed or not. Whether you're neutral about money, it's simply providing a service and making income, or whether there's this charge about money and spirit. Because there is in most of us. Big, big charge. Are you comfortable if someone says, how much money do you make a year? Would you share that? Some people wouldn't. Why not? You don't have to, but why wouldn't you? We'll tell about our sexual lives to strangers, but we don't want to talk about our money. That's private. So we first need to look at our money issues. Let me read you a few quotations before we go on. Tom Robbins once said, there's a certain Buddhistic calm that comes from having money in the bank. James Baldwin wrote, money is like sex. You think about it a lot when you don't have it. And think of other things when you do. Mahatma Gandhi, whom I admire greatly, once wrote, live simply so that others may simply live. This makes good bumper sticker copy. And yet there's something about it that's false. There's a zero-sum belief that if you have more money, someone else necessarily has less. It doesn't work that way. Ask any economist. If you make money, you can do it by providing jobs for other people, become an employer, hire people, and create more money and more wealth, and provide a service to other people. Abstaining from money doesn't make anybody else any wealthier. It's not as if there's X amount to go around, and you shouldn't take more than your share. Your share is whatever you want it to be. Will money make you happy? No. No. In fact, there was a study done, an informal study. About 270 people were called up on the telephone at random, and they were asked, if you had $1 million, would it make you happy? And 76% of the people said, yes. Then they asked 10 millionaires, did $1 million make you happy? And it was unanimous. No. So money doesn't lead to happiness, but you know what it does lead to? First of all, you get a more quiet environment. People who have a lot of money, it's quieter. The walls are thicker. There's more space around them. And they rarely stay up late at night worrying about having too much money. So money does buy a more interesting, complex set of problems. Doesn't make you happy. You're still, wherever you go, there you are. Wealthy or not. We have a belief that poor people in Africa and India are suffering horribly, and the rich and the wealthy have it all together. I know wealthy people who are suffering worse than many people I've met in India. They're suffering because their relationship is painful and self-destructive or hurting the other. They're suffering because their health is bad or because they're confused and lost, even though they've developed a talent and a drive for making a lot of money. So let's not assume so quickly that wealth means comfort and we should envy or somehow have animosity toward the wealthy. They suffer too. They're suffering everywhere. Some of the poor have family around them and loving support, and they're working hard with a purpose and drive. So we have to examine many of the assumptions we've had before. By the way, that quote of Gandhi's, live simply so that others may simply live, people have heard that quote, many of them, but they haven't heard the wealthy industrialist who supported Gandhi's cause, who once said, it cost me a fortune to keep Gandhi simple. I was once sitting in my hot tub. It was a used hot tub. But I was sitting in my hot tub one winter's night, and I was on my cell phone talking to my editor in Berkeley, California. And I said, Nancy, she was very socially conscious. I thought I needed some feedback at that point. I said, Nancy, I feel kind of guilty, you know. I'm sitting here in my hot tub feeling great on my cell phone talking to you, and I know at this moment there are starving people and starving children in places around the world. And she said, well, that's a fact. Nancy said, you know, Dan, though, Joan Baez once said, I'm not for voluntary poverty. I'm against involuntary poverty. Big difference. Epictetus, the Greek, said, contentment consists not in great wealth, but in few wants. Maybe there's some truth in that. But there are some people whose ideal is to live like Thoreau. They've read Walden. Of course, they're not aware that Thoreau lived that way for like all of 6 months during the warm months. It was a little experiment he did. But they have this ideal that I'm going to live Mother Goose apple pie beautiful in the woods. I'll have a little camper and I'll live there and I'll... And